This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting today from the studios of WVTF and Radio IQ in Roanoke, Virginia. There's an audience of about 30 people with us here in the studio. Thank you all for coming in. Appreciate your time. We're only about 250 miles from our usual home in Studio 3A, but the difference has to be measured in more than miles. Roanoke is in the middle of Appalachia, a part of the country known for its physical beauty, a point not lost on us as we drove west to the Blue Ridge Mountains and then south through the Shenandoah Valley. We could dwell on that for quite a while, especially as the trees here start to turn. But today we want to talk about the people who live here. And by that, we mean a huge swath of the eastern United States. People here are known as Appalachians, mountain people, and by a few other names that maybe aren't so flattering. We want to hear from Appalachians today about how you see yourselves. How do you connect to the history of the region? How do the mountains shape you? Our number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, we're going to hear some of the stories that people here in Roanoke are telling in the StoryCorps van that's visiting here. But first, Appalachians on Appalachia, and we'll begin on the phones. And let's go to Beth. Beth with us from Huntington in West Virginia.
Hi, this is Beth.
Go ahead, please. You're on the air.
Hi, yes, I just wanted to say I heard your program, and it's wonderful to hear this because it's a beautiful region. I've been connected to it my whole life. My mother grew up here in West Virginia. Her father was a coal miner, and I grew up in Florida, a very flat state. But every summer we come up and enjoy the summertime here, and I find myself coming back over and over again. I went to Virginia Tech outside of Roanoke there. And moved away to Phoenix for 12 years, lived in Asia for two, and I'm right back here now getting a job as an RN in the area, and I love it.
What is it about this area you think that keeps bringing you here, keeps bringing you home?
I think the people, number one. You know, it's hard to find in America and in the world this kind of, you know, your neighbors, and you wave to the guy driving down the street, and just a sense of family, even through friends. And I love the change of season here, being in a places that didn't have that. And I love the bluegrass music.
All right, Beth, thanks very much. Welcome home.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. Email us, talk@npr.org. And joining us here in Roanoke are Ross Spears and Jamie Ross. They're the producers of a new four-part documentary series called Appalachia, A History of Mountains and People. The series airs on PBS this winter. It'll be screened right here in Roanoke tomorrow night. And Jamie and Ross, nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you for having us.
And Jamie, the story we just heard, you hear a lot of stories like that in your documentary.
Oh, we heard a number of them. It made me think of something Margaret Mead is credited with saying, which is that Appalachians are a homing people. That they're and, I mean, this young woman has traveled all over the world, and yet the pull of these mountains hasn't lost its hold on her. And that's what they do. That's what, in the years of interviewing we did, that's the one thing you learn, is that these mountains take hold of your heart and they don't let go.
I wanted to ask you, you are originally from Louisiana, also not part of Appalachia, but people come here sometimes with preconceptions. What preconceptions did you come here with, and how have they been changed?
Oh, well, that's a good question. I was brought kicking and screaming to Asheville, North Carolina, by the man I was married to at that time. And I, you know, everybody's seen Deliverance, which did not do the region a favor. And so there's the whole idea of, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies, and I thought actually doing this film has been a real eye opener for me, but Asheville itself was a real eye opener for me. It has a strong influx of outsiders, but it also has still an incredible strong indigenous culture, as the sociologists would say. It's still the feel of the place is determined by mountain hospitality, what the young woman was talking about, the friendliness. People are excruciatingly polite there. You can sit through a change of light looking for something on your floorboard and nobody behind you blows their horn because they figure you must have a good reason or else you wouldn't be doing that. And when the year we moved there, which reminds me of something that Ross and I were talking about this before we came on, about a characteristic of Appalachian people that they don't get credit for, and they sure didn't get credit for, Deliverance, which is that mountain people tend to be very hospitable and tolerant, When I moved to Asheville, it had at that time, I heard on NPR, fourth highest per capita gay population in the country. It also is the home of Billy Graham and a number of other really, really strong Protestant congregations. Those groups coincide absolutely in harmony together in Asheville, North Carolina. And I think it's that mountain, you mind your business and I'll mind mine kind of attitude that lets that happen.
Here's an email we have from Nina in Southeast Ohio. We were there just last week to the program from Athens, Ohio. I was raised in the foothills of Appalachia in Athens, Ohio. I left Athens after graduation from Ohio University for the city life and found myself living in Indianapolis and Dallas and the lands of flat and concrete. I returned to Southeast Ohio 8 years ago and was immediately surrounded by the warmth and security of my hills. I will not leave again. I would like it would be like leaving the loving arms of a mother. Well, let me ask you, Ross Spears. You are from Appalachia, from Tennessee, and
I'm from Johnson City, Tennessee. That's right. And my past, my life somewhat coincides with Nina's there. I grew up in East Tennessee in the small city of Johnson City during the 1950s, and left right after graduating from high school, and sort of tried to get away, I guess you could say. I went away to college, and then I went all the way across the country to film school, and after film school, moved to New York City for 7 or 8 years. But at no time did I ever give up my Tennessee driver's license, and that's where I've always voted. And no matter where the studio is, I've always kept this one foot in Tennessee. And I think what Nina described there is true. I mean, that's where family is. That's where familiarity is. That's where all these sort of homing feelings are.
Let's get another caller on the line. Let's go to Ed. Ed with us from Acadia in Kentucky.
Yes, hello?
Go ahead, Ed. You're on the air.
Yes, I was born in West Virginia and joined the Army on my 18th birthday. And I'd never been anywhere outside of the county where I lived until I joined the Army, and that was a lot of firsts for me. And I realized that growing up in the mountains made me a stronger, more resilient person just by the way I could deal with other people. When I first joined the Army, I heard all the old, you know, questions. Did your drill sergeant have to teach you to tie your shoes? Do you guys really marry your cousins back there? And it used to make me mad that we were being stereotyped as this, and I saw it as a type of profiling until one day in a closed ranks inspection, a sergeant major asked me where I was from, and I told him. And he goes, well, both of your legs are the same length, I see. And I guess he could see my face turning red as I got a little angry. And he smiled at me and said, well, don't worry, son. I've heard it all. I'm from McDowell County. And he was referencing, you know, to growing up in the hills, one leg is longer than the other from standing on the side of a mountain. And I live in Western Kentucky now because that's where I work and that's where I'm raising my kids. But every time I go back, I mean, it's almost like leaving the first time. And I do plan on going back when I retire, if I get to retire, and my kids are raised. But I've never saw myself ending my life anywhere other than the mountains. I've started in the mountains, and I plan on going back when the time comes, when I retire, to live out the rest of my life.
Ed, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. It's a great story. Let's go to another guest. Ronald Eller is director of the Appalachian Center and associate professor of history at the University of Kentucky, originally from southern West Virginia. He joins us now from WUKY in Lexington, Kentucky, one of our member stations there. Welcome to the program. Nice to have you with us today.
Good to be here.
And you're one of the people interviewed in the documentary series, Appalachia, History of Mountains and People. And we want to play an excerpt from the film now. You're describing a time when you were a boy and a teacher saw some potential in you.
This teacher told me that I had a lot of talent, but if I wanted to make anything out of myself, I had to become somebody different from who my people were. And, of course, she meant that I needed to change the way I spoke. To lose my accent, to change the way I dressed, to appreciate a different kind of music than I had had appreciated. And, of course, I learned to do that. I learned to pass. When we went to Ohio, I wore clothes that were made by my mother. My mother was a superb seamstress, and She used to make all of our clothes, and I was very proud of that because at the time I loved to dress in black. This was the era of Zorro and the others, and so my mother would make me black pants and black shirts, and of course with my white socks and greased back wavy hair of the mid-50s, I'm sure I looked like Fonzie and filled the expectations of the hillbilly image quite well. But I remember the day that I went home from school and asked my mother if we didn't have enough money now that I could go to the store and buy a store-bought shirt. She didn't say anything. She just knew what I was dealing with. And she said, sure. And that evening, we went out to the store, and I stopped wearing my mother's clothes.
And, Mr. Aller, we can hear the emotion in your voice as you tell that story.
Neil, that's a very common theme, I think, for many of us from the mountains. We have such close ties to our own communities and our own families. My wife says that being from the mountains is in your blood. And yet, how we see ourselves is often so different from how the rest of America sees us, and it constantly puts us in a state of tension when we are out of the mountains and coming into contact with those negative images and stereotypes. I have for 40 years spoken all over the United States and throughout the region, and that story is a common story for many, many folk in the mountains. That's the sort of dual lives that they have come to live.
We just have a few seconds left in this segment, but you had a tough time growing up in Ohio, out of the mountains.
Well, Ohio was never quite home for us. Every other weekend, my family was going back home to West Virginia, and Ohio was a strange land to us. I learned how to pass. I learned how to change the way I dress and the way I combed my hair. But I never also lost the meaning of the mountains themselves for us and what it meant to me personally.
We're talking about Appalachia, the region and the culture, how the mountains shape the people who live here. We want to hear from Appalachians today, wherever they may live. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. From Roanoke, Virginia, it's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting today from the studios of WVTF and Radio IQ in Roanoke, Virginia. Ross Spears calls this part of the country a place unlike any other state or place on earth. And by that, of course, he means Appalachia, a region that stretches from Alabama to Pennsylvania, even parts of New York. Along with Jamie Ross, Ross Spears is the filmmaker behind the documentary series Appalachia, A History of Mountains and People. The series airs on PBS this winter. They're joined by our other guest, Ronald Eller, associate professor in the history department at the University of Kentucky and author of Uneven Ground, Appalachia, since 1945. We want to hear from Appalachians today, wherever they may be living now. How do you see yourselves? How do you connect to the history of this region? How do the mountains shape you? Our number, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Let's go to Eric, and Eric's with us on the line from Mystic, Connecticut.
It's a far, far cry from the mountains, but I used to live down in Jonesboro, Tennessee, and we moved down there from a small town in New Jersey, just my wife and my kids. And it shapes you. The South and the Appalachian Mountains really shape you. And for me personally, it shaped me as a ball because of all the good cooking. But we live in Connecticut right now. We moved up here for personal reasons. But my wife and I have said that as soon as we can retire, we're back down into the mountains. You feel a certain sense of closer to nature and just the awe of God in the mountains.
And when you get back, what do you plan to choke your arteries with?
It doesn't matter so long as it's fried.
And has cornbread with it, right?
The biggest thing that I learned to like down there was fried okra and fried green tomatoes.
Erica, they're in short supply in Mystic, but there's some other good food there, too. But I know what you missed. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And there is something about this region, and I wanted to ask you, Ronald Eller, there's a word that you used in that clip of tape that we played before, and a word you use a couple of other times in the film that Jamie Ross and Ross Spears make, and that the word is hillbilly, and you don't use it disparagingly or even affectionately. You just use it to describe people from your home.
Folk from the mountains tend generally to be very proud of our culture, of our community. And like a lot of other minority populations, we sometimes make fun of the derogatory kinds of words that are used and applied to us. And so for us, hillbilly is often something that's taken with a great deal of pride, if in fact it means someone who is in fact close to the land, someone who has a strong sense of family and a strong sense of religion and a strong identity with one's neighbors and with one's kin, so it's not a negative term in that sense. Now if someone outside of the region applies it to us, it takes on a very different kind of meaning, and we respond appropriately.
We'll not go there. let's get a questioner from here in the audience in Roanoke.
Hi, I'm Frances West from Catawba, Virginia, just over the mountain from Roanoke. And I was going to comment first on the term hillbilly. And I play old-time music, fiddle and banjo music, and I'm around a lot of mountain people. And we call ourselves Appalachian Americans. And I've noticed, especially with the young people playing this music, they've taken that mantle, the term hillbilly, and consider it a wonderful thing to be. It's kind
of
like
honor. Yeah.
A badge of honor. It's kind of like I think in the 60s and 70s when black people were, you know, the whole black power movement. But my question to you is, how do you consider Appalachians or mountain people different from southerners in general, rural southerners in general?
Jamie?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Well, our whole film series is about how land shapes people and how people shape the land. And, of course, what we have here in Appalachia is an incredibly unique landscape. And it's not unique just in the contours of the fact that there's some of the oldest mountains in the world. There's some of the richest mountains in the world. And I think that was something Ron was talking about and somebody talked about earlier. Today we were discussing this, that we, in the film, one thing we try to show, and I think that comes out real clear, is that mountain people have this real sense of locality and attachment to local place. I think Southerners are more used to thinking of themselves as a group as Southerners because they were created politically by a political event. Now, Barbara Kingsolver says if we had a flag of Appalachia, as you know, that the salamander would be on it. But then you have to have a state of Appalachia, which might not be a bad idea because, as you know, we're in the backyards of everybody else's state right now except for West Virginia. But I really do think that the mountains are the defining characteristic and they're what make people different. And also the biodiversity here. There are more species of trees in 1 acre of co-forest in this part of the world than there are in all of Europe. And we grow up amongst that, the people, folks here do. And I think that we just come to, somehow it gets in our bones, not just the shape of the hills, but the rich texture of the life around us. And I don't think that's true at hardly any other place on the planet. This is one of the world's great temperate forests that we have lived that we live amongst. So that's why I really do think that the landscape really is makes the defining difference.
The scientist E.O. Wilson, who's in the film, uses the term biophilia, the love of living things, literally. And I think that people in Appalachia are really infected with that, perhaps more so than people who live in big cities.
Now, I saw a lot about salamanders. You didn't let them talk about ants.
That's right.
Let's get another questioner here on the mic and then Roanoke.
Hey, y'all, I'm Charlie Counts. I'm from Saltville, Virginia, and I'm a fourth-generation tobacco farmer, and right now I'm going to Roanoke College, so I just thought it would be interesting to maybe ask and talk about life on the outside for people that are originally from Appalachian but aren't really going to make a life from there. For instance, for me, I'm fourth-generation tobacco farmer, but our family sold out during the government buyout in the early 2000s when the government got anti-smoking. So I've had to look for new things, you know, life other than raising tobacco and new jobs, new houses. I've moved to the city and that kind of thing. And it's a lot different than, you know, going down to the little one-room church that 20 people is a good attendance day on Sunday and, you know, everybody raising tobacco in the valley. And one of the things adjusting on the outside that I've had to do is I've ran into a lot of stereotypes like your other guests have been talking about. For instance, this summer I worked here at Public Radio, had an internship, and I had to cover up my southern accent. Rick told me that I had to do that if I was going to be on the radio, that it didn't sound pleasing to the ear, that unless you were well known, you had to. So I learned how to do that, and that's one of the things, you know, adjusting on to the outside. I just thought that was interesting. I'd tell you all that.
Yeah, Charlie, you see, the idea is to get behind the camera. Then you don't have to change your accent.
Right, right. Be in charge.
But God bless you, because I'm hoping, I mean, there are so many people like you in the region right now that that have gotten, as you said, we have an economy that is hostile to small farmers. And Appalachia is a land of small farmers, has traditionally been a land of small farmers. I'm hoping, you know, like Barbara Kingsolver is, that with the current high price of gasoline, which also hurts farmers, I'm hoping that there's going to be a world for you guys, you know, with local food and local products, because we're not going to be able to pay to get our tomatoes shipped from California. So anyway.
I was going to ask Ronald Eller to weigh in on this, how this move away specifically from small farms and tobacco, which was such a big part in various parts of Appalachia.
I think Charlie has really hit upon something that confronts large numbers of folks from the mountains, and that is the fact that you end up living in two worlds. You will never give up or completely abandon your Appalachianness, for that to use that phrase. That's always going to be there with you. And most of us from the mountains have learned to become bicultural, to understand what it takes to function in the larger world. But hopefully that doesn't mean that we can't lose our attachments to people and our attachments to each other and our knowledge of what's really important in life. And, you know, if the Appalachian experience should tell us as a nation anything, it should tell us that you know, getting bigger and better and growing and changing is sometimes good, but it comes at a pretty heavy cost to who we are as individuals and as people. In many ways, the nation has created this image of Appalachia as the other America, this place that's so different. But I'm convinced that Appalachia is not the other America. It's, in fact, much of the same kinds of struggles that we as a nation have gone through, we have faced very intensely here in the mountains. And we've learned to be bicultural, as have many other Americans.
Let's get another caller on the line. Let's go to Tony. Tony with us from Poland in Ohio.
Hi, Neil.
Hi, Tony.
I appreciate you taking my call. I love your show. And I just wanted to add, I've been in trout streams from North Georgia into Sevierville, and had an interesting experience as a child. My brother, my oldest brother, was going to Ohio University in Athens. And my father took us out into the mountains on a little day trip to see sort of something different. And we were from the suburbs of Cleveland at the time. And there was actually a home there that was literally a tar paper shack without doors and windows and pigs in the yard. And we just stood there. I thought we were looking at the pigs, but he wanted me to see something different. And frankly, I've had an opportunity to go all through West Virginia and see the changes in the state, and it's amazing. And all through the South in particular, but I think there's an independence there, and it's really standing out. I mean, maybe it's Senator Byrd, maybe it's just their work ethic, whatever. It's changed completely. I've seen the housing improved. They have four-lane interstate systems, the Gali River for whitewater rafting, et cetera. There's been a lot of forward thinkers there, and I really believe John Denver got it right when he sang about the Mountain Mama. And it's neat to see. From Huntington to Charleston, there's a rebirth. And frankly, I think public radio had a lot to do with it. And I know you guys won't give yourself kudos, but if you listen to public radio in West Virginia, they actually embrace folk music, and they make people feel like just because they may not know where their ancestors came from doesn't mean they weren't great ancestors from England or Irish or what have you. So it's just been a really neat thing to see, and my hat's off to all the folks in West Virginia.
Well, Tony, thanks for the kind words. But poverty, as you saw it as a child, Jamie certainly continues to be part of the Appalachian experience.
It does. And Ron actually can speak to this more thoroughly. But it does continue, but as it's not the defining experience. I think Ron would agree that most of the Appalachia looks very much like the rest of America economically. We still lag behind, I think, in per capita income, and a large part of that is for years this was blamed on culture, that the Appalachian people just weren't enterprising enough, but it's interesting where our strongest pockets of poverty are also where our extractive industries have gained root. There's no other way for people to earn a living. The coal mines they employ fewer and fewer people. Wherever we have extractive industries, we tend to have pockets of poverty. And so how we treat the land goes along with how we treat the people, and people suffer from the ways we do or do not respect the land.
Tony, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil.
We're listening to Appalachians on Appalachia today. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email we have from Ruth in Columbus, Ohio. I, too, love the mountains. Both my daughters were born in southern West Virginia, but because of the poor economy there, we moved to Ohio for a better life. I miss the mountains every day and long to return. I am Ron Eller's sister. He was the first in our family to get a college education. We're proud he represents our family and Appalachia.
Quite leave the mountains.
And I suspect you have to call your sister tonight. Now, let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And let's go to line 6. This is Quinn. Quinn with us from Spokane in Washington.
Hi there. I grew up in a very small town in Upper Eastern Tennessee in the Cumberland Mountains. My family were traditional farmers, and my father also had a hardware store. And I was accepted to Harvard. So I went to Harvard in the fall of 1970, never having really traveled out of Upper Eastern Tennessee, and arrived in Cambridge, at which point the street people were very prominent, and, you know, to a great extent, our campus was a battleground for the whole anti-war movement. 3 weeks after I arrived, the Center for International Affairs building was blown up, and there were numerous bomb scares in Lamont Library that fall. And it was so surreal, although I didn't know what surreal meant at that time. And then after I left Harvard in 1974, I actually went back and worked for an energy corporation, negotiating coal leases and working with the coal miners in southeastern Kentucky. And it was, again, a surreal experience, and the reality of the beyond difficult living conditions for the coal miners of that area, along with their families, of course, abject poverty, difficulties with education. It was, again, really a life-changing experience for me.
There are plenty of stories in the film that Jamie Ross and Ross Spears made, the multi-part documentary series called Appalachia, A History of Mountains and People, including many of the stories of the struggles of the miners that you're describing. And Quinn, we wanted to thank you very much for your phone call. The series airs this winter on PBS. There's a screening here in Roanoke, Virginia, tomorrow night. And we'd like to thank Ross Spears and Jamie Ross for being with us today here in Roanoke. Appreciate your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And our thanks also to Ronald Eller, Associate Professor in the History Department at the University of Kentucky, author of Uneven Ground, Appalachia since 1945, with us today from member station WUKY in Lexington, Kentucky. And Ronald Eller, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
And we'll end with two emails. We got this from Missy in Springfield, Missouri. Growing up in Northeast Tennessee in the 80s and 90s, my mother taught me the worst thing in the world would be not to get out of Appalachia. So that's what I did, but I miss it so much. I also have developed a real appreciation for the culture as an adult. When I go back to visit my family and extended family in Kingsport, Tennessee, I feel like that is home, even though I haven't lived there in more than 10 years. And finally, this from Debbie in Oxford, Ohio. I don't have a question, just wanted to thank you for pronouncing Appalachia correctly. Which I, from time to time, I am a displaced Virginian living in Ohio and hate when Appalachia is mispronounced. So thank you very much for overlooking my mispronunciations. Up next, some of the stories of economic hardship that are being told here to the StoryCorps. Their Silver RV is also with us here in Roanoke, Virginia this week. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.